Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, August 2nd, 2016. I'm Jason Powell. This was supposed to be a member-exclusive edition of the WWE Raw Audio Review. However, things come up. In this case, I am heading out of town on Tuesday evening, and just as things always seem to go wrong right before you leave town, our dog needs to go to the vet. And so at the time I'd normally, I just needed to give myself enough time tomorrow, basically. So it's kind of a combo show. Yes, my dog's pain is good news for non-members. Non-members also taking a hit this week because there will not be a .NET Weekly audio show. However, we will be doubling up on that to make up for it. Maybe even next week. We'll see what happens here as we get closer to SummerSlam. Believe me, we will more than make up for it. But just taking a rare few days away, I'll still be active on the site. But recording audio is going to be a little bit of a mess. I'm going to try to get the bulk of my audio done before I go. There's going to be some stuff that I can't, but a little bit tougher to do in a motel or hotel. What do they call it? I don't even know what the hell I'm staying in. But long story short, you'll still have your audio fixed because the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast returns on Thursdays on the All Access side. Looking forward to hearing from Jake and Will both Thursday and Friday. And you'll definitely be getting your audio fix on the member side and on the All Access side, even while I am away doing whatever it is I'm going to be doing. All right, Raw. Now that I put that long intro that bored most of you. Atlanta, Georgia, Phillips Arena, the return of Brock Lesnar. He eats an RKO. And I'm sure there's a lot of people going, I knew it! If you had the under on 3 weeks for how long it would take WWE to have someone cross the line and show up on one of the shows they don't actually wrestle for, you win, because Randy Orton ended up appearing at the end of the show and took out Brock Lesnar with an RKO. And I don't have a problem with that. I mean, we can chuckle about how soon it is it is premature for this to be happening. It didn't feel like a big event when security ran out and tried to stop him, but at the same time, I applaud it. It wasn't just accepted that Randy Orton did this. It wasn't like management, you know, the storyline management had signed off on it. Stephanie McMahon and Mick Foley were running right out there, having security go after Randy Orton, and I liked it for that reason. I also like it because even if this doesn't happen, there's at least a possibility that Brock Lesnar can go to SmackDown seeking revenge. They can play that possibility up a little bit, saying you don't know what's going to happen here with these two. If circumstances were different and these two had ended up on the same brand, or, you know, I think this is just kind of an exception, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I don't think you're going to be seeing this happen on a regular basis in WWE. I would hope not, at least for the time being, until Vince McMahon gets bored. And that's then all bets are off. But I really don't take issue with it. It's an interpromotional match, if you will, interbrand match at the pay-per-view that was basically set up before the draft. And so, yeah, I mean, it's cool. I'm fine with it. Some of you may not be, but I just don't think you can get bent out of shape over this one, even as early as it is, just because of the way it was portrayed. Had they portrayed this differently, believe me, I'd be all over this. But the overall show, I thought, dragged. It felt like a long 3 hours, boy. I don't know what it was. It wasn't like it was a bad show. There was some good wrestling on this show. I thought things got off to a good start. But the live crowd did seem drained by the end of the night. I wonder if it was some strategy to have Brock Lesnar out there in the final segment. A lot of times they will open with Brock or open the second hour with Brock. I remember when I went to the show at Target Center in the Twin Cities, they saved Brock for last, but it was a homecoming. And, you know, say that was the biggest reaction of the night. In this case, given everything that's going on with UFC and the USADA testing and all of that, I wonder if they just thought save Brock for last when the crowd's not as amped up. I don't think it would have mattered because the live crowd seemed into Lesnar. They weren't as passionate as they usually are, but it was really hard to tell. If he had received that reaction at like the top of the second hour, or even the top of the third hour, be going, uh-oh. You know, they might not have been giving him catcalls that I could hear or anything like that. They seemed to be cheering, but it wasn't with as much passion as usual. It didn't feel like an event that Brock Lesnar was back, but I do kind of wonder, is that because of the third hour, you know, that this being kind of the tough spot, even, you know, I mean, the overrun at the end of the show used to be a huge deal, and it, you know, it still typically does good numbers, but now with 3 hours, I mean, it's really tough to keep a crowd engaged that long, and they were into Brock, but again, just not as into him as you would have expected, and it's just really hard to pinpoint. Is it all the stuff with USADA? Is it, you know, and the testing? Or is it just the crowd was drained, and even if there hadn't been any issues coming out of UFC, if this crowd would have reacted the exact same way? It's so hard to tell. Let's work our way through this. We opened up with a video that recapped last week's episode. I like that. And then we got a the new Raw opening. Still not a big fan of the Raw theme song. Heard better. Heard worse, though, for certainly on SmackDown, when some of the gems that SmackDown has had over the years. That's better than that, but it's still not just, I don't know, it just doesn't, there's not much pep to it. It doesn't really get you going. We had some pyro, then Michael Cole introduced the show. Corey Graves and Byron Saxton were on commentary. They did not go to them right away to show them standing at their new spot or anything like that. Instead, they had Sasha Banks make her entrance, and the fans once again chanted, "You deserve it." This was a hot crowd to start. It wasn't like Atlanta was a bad crowd. It just was a burned-out crowd by the end of the night, is my guess. She thanked the fans for that, and she talked about making a statement. She talked about how this how she made she and she had everyone she said everyone went home from Brooklyn last year talking about Bayley and the Boss because they stole the show. And she said this year won't be any different when she defends a title against Charlotte at SummerSlam. And it's like, yeah, you should hope it is, because you lost that match to Bayley. I don't like when they do this. It drives me insane. It's not about stealing the show. It's about winning your championship, retaining your championship. She lost her title to Bayley last year. And you can certainly acknowledge the fact that it was a hell of a match, and it was. But I think you need to stay in storyline mode and at least, express some disappointment and how the only thing different this year is that she's going to hold on to her title. And it's something along those lines. And it just irks me when they do that. Charlotte made her entrance, and I thought she was really good here. Sasha held her, was really over with the crowd, and Charlotte was just cocky, and she put things in a way where, it was just good, strong, not even heel logic. She just came across believable in her approach to why this time could be different. She talked about she doesn't need Dana Brooke, she doesn't need her father, and said she assumed he's off vacationing somewhere in a resting home. And she said she's going to beat Sasha at SummerSlam all by herself. She was the best for over 300 days, and Sasha capitalized on one mistake. And she said it's one thing to take home the prom king, it's another to get him to put a ring on your finger. And she said, "You're just a one-night stand." I like that. I mean, I'm sure it was something somebody worked on very hard and creative to come up with that line. I don't think that was the one that Sasha just, or Charlotte, I should say, just came up with on her own on the fly. But I thought it was a good line. And Sasha responded by saying that as the daughter of Ric Flair, Charlotte probably would, she probably wouldn't even be standing there if it wasn't for one-night stands. And then all of a sudden we hear, "Quiet, quiet, quiet," repeatedly. Chris Jericho comes out, and he is talking about how he says, "You're an ungrateful little punk." And he's talking to Sasha. It wasn't clear at first who he was telling to be quiet, but he did explain that it was Sasha, because of, well, he likes Charlotte. He respects her. And he talked about how Charlotte is royalty. She's outdone everything that her father has accomplished. And he says, "Who has Ric Flair ever beat, right?" I get a kick out of the line. It was funny. I kind of wish he just would have left it at you raving about Charlotte being royalty. I don't know. It's just kind of a credibility killer and sounds a little too tongue in cheek when he said that line. I mean, it's still funny. It didn't take me completely out of the moment, but just one little nitpick there. He added that Charlotte is going to beat Sasha at SummerSlam, and then he asked what even makes Sasha the boss. And he said that she's the boss of purple-haired, teeny-bopper, stupid, idiot fans. And he said he doesn't know whether Sasha is a distant relative of Snoop Dogg or Puff Daddy. And he said that she's the boss, or she's not the boss, she's a brat, that's it. Enzo Amore comes out, very strong reaction. I thought it was Enzo and Cass. I just saw the video screen and heard the music, and no, but it was Enzo. And he said that he usually comes out with the big man, but three is a crowd. He likes to do business by himself sometimes. And then he was kind of flirting with Sasha and then went back and forth with "How you doing?" And Charlotte told Sasha to go for it because there's only one way that she's heard to describe Enzo's love life: soft. And Charlotte and Jericho were described as a couple of haters by Enzo. And he said listening to Jericho speak is like passing a kidney stone. Jericho called him a hip-hop hobbit. Got a kick out of that. It's one thing when, like, Kevin Nash, call somebody a hobbit. It's another thing when the guy Jericho's size says it, where it's like, yeah, that's fine. And then we ended up with those two kind of going back and forth. And Mick Foley ends up interrupting a Chris Jericho rant. And the fans were chanting for Foley. So he is definitely over with the crowd. And he stood on the stage and said that he does care how they're doing, because Jericho said he doesn't care how anyone's doing. And he said he may not, he said, he may not be the boss, but he is Jericho's boss. So he's not Sasha Banks, but he is Jericho's boss. And he said that, well, he worked in a plug for his new network show. So it looks like Holy Foley debuting right after SummerSlam. And he said that he can't wait to see Sasha and Charlotte in the ring again. So rather than just book the rematch now, he booked Enzo and Sasha against Charlotte and Jericho for an immediate rematch. And they went to a commercial. When they came back, Cole did hype Brock's first appearance, and then we had Kevin Owens sitting on commentary. He was putting on a tie over his t-shirt, and in that opener, it was Charlotte and Chris Jericho defeating Sasha Banks and Enzo Amore in 10:40. This was fun. I mean, there was really good energy to that opening segment too. It kind of felt like we're back to the Raw formula of a 20-minute verbal segment to start the show. At the same time, you had Sasha open things. You had Enzo involved. And then Charlotte and Jericho. Jericho with the wrong guy, I'm not going to want to see in the opening segment. He put him in there with kind of a new cast of characters, and it worked. And I also felt like it worked to have the men involved in the women's title situation. Even if it was, I mean, this, normally I just like cringe when I like mixed tag match. Like, oh boy, this was fun. It was cool. I liked the finish too. It was, Dana Brooke did get involved at one point. But it was Jericho returning to the ring and taking a slap from Sasha, and Charlotte using that distraction to hit the natural selection and get the win. So Charlotte pins Sasha, and before you start going, ah, oh, they're taking away all of her momentum. Hey, I think this makes sense. They're telling the story. You know, they kind of played off of what Charlotte was talking about earlier. You know, is this kind of, is she a one-hit wonder? And I don't think she is by any means. I don't think that's what they have in mind for Sasha. I think I'm guessing Sasha retains the title. So I think what they're just trying to do is establish that, yeah, this is not just a slam dunk that she retains the title. That you know, she managed to fight off Dana Brooke last time, but something like this can happen. And so I think it was I think it was the correct move to have Charlotte go over here. And I really did enjoy the match, just kind of the dynamic of the characters with Enzo and Jericho and Charlotte and Sasha. After the match, Jericho hit a code breaker on Enzo and then taunted him. Out came Big Cass. And Owen said, "That's the dangerous one, and Jericho should probably get out of the ring." Jericho did flee, and he was tended to by Charlotte and Dana. They both had their arms around him, were checking on him, making sure he was okay. It was fun. They went to hyping an exclusive interview, Michael Cole's exclusive interview with Finn Balor for later in the show. After a commercial break, we found out that the Bella Twins not only appeared at the Teen Choice Awards, they frickin' won. They won Best Female Athlete. Really? Best female athlete, the Bella Twins, is the same like outfit that had those very questionable Slammy Award voting. Are they in charge of this too? The Bella Twins, wow. As I wrote tonight, I really fear for our future. That if this if the voting results are at like who in the hell did they put up against? I just didn't even know they were nominated, let alone if they had a chance to win this. And nothing against the Bella Twins, but. There are not better athletes in the world than the Bella Twins. Byron Saxton made his entrance, and actually, I wrote that Byron made his entrance. He actually interviewed the guy in the ring was Evan Anderholm, and a .NET reader pointed out that he knows a guy named Evan. Thought it was funny. Found out that Evan he knows somebody on creative who pitched the name to use. Now, I definitely have had emails from this person before. I'm not going to get into detail. I'm going to get him in trouble or the person who works for WWE in trouble. It's just the guy's relaying info. And so I don't have any way to prove it, but I thought it was a cool story. I don't like he was looking for anything. So if he wants his name out there, he can certainly let me know. But I got a kick out of the story. And Braun Strowman shockingly defeated Evan. It was another face-first choke slam. Evan did not have the same great qualities as Mr. James Ellsworth did last week. This was actually Corey Hollis, who's been all over the independent scene, and you've seen him in Ring of Honor before, I believe, and all over the place. So yeah, I mean, he just looked like an indie guy, you know, where James Ellsworth, as I've said, Didn't look like an enhancement wrestler. He looked like a frickin' jobber. There's a difference in my mind. Backstage, we had Stephanie McMahon talking with Mick Foley. They were very cheerful. They are getting along. So if you're waiting for that Stephanie McMahon slap to occur, not yet. They're still... It's all good on Raw. They love each other. Stephanie said at this rate, Shane McMahon's run as GM will be a distant memory somewhere on the WWE Network in a collection feature. And some people thought I was going overboard with my criticism of the first SmackDown of the new era. Wow. Mark Henry entered the room. They're all happy. He's an ambassador for WWE to the Summer Olympics. And he was excited to go, but he's also excited about the new era. He made room in the Hall of Pain. And Stephanie's kind of like, yeah, we brought you back to be a mentor. And then he wasn't happy with that. He kept his cool. He was just giving her the big sales pitch about being the strongest man who ever lived and a former champion, two-timer in the Olympics and all this different stuff. Mick Foley, he bit. He heard it. He was down. He gave him a title match. He ended up booking him against Rusev for the championship. Henry got fired up about this and bringing the belt back to America. And the crowd reacted very favorably. This worked. Then we saw R-Truth and Goldust. R-Truth is still playing Pokemon. That's his thing, the Pokemon Go thing. And Goldust told him that they had to go to the ring. Truth assumed that's where we'd find out more prize. I don't play the game, people, so if I'm not using the right lingo, don't criticize me. I'm a grown-ass man who just has too much to do. Or I might be playing the game. Believe me, I like video games. But this one on the phone, and like when I play video games, I want to sit on my ass and play Madden for like 10 hours. I know, makes me bad. You people are actually out getting energy and or getting exercise and stuff like that. After commercial break, though, we saw the Shining Stars beat Goldust and R-Truth because R-Truth was too consumed with playing the game to actually take a tag from Goldust. And Goldust ended up being pinned. Goldust didn't seem all that bothered by this. I was waiting, like, is he finally going to destroy R-Truth? I don't know. I didn't come away feeling like that's on the verge of happening. It's just, I guess you just accept that when you're R-Truth's tag team partner that he might be into Pokemon Go. Cole then hyped Finn Balor for after the break. They came back. This was the ad for SmackDown that they aired repeatedly throughout the show, just as they did for Raw. And I've had some people go, why are they doing that? Blah, blah, blah. It's not true to the brand split. I wish they would take just a moment to explain it, that, yeah, hey, it's all under the WWE umbrella, and we've, you know, either Vince McMahon is forcing them to, or they've agreed. We trade an equal number or something like that, and you better be right about it, because believe me, there are people who will count. But maybe for every two commercials that SmackDown gets, well, actually, it would be for every two commercials that Raw gets, SmackDown gets three. Because Raw's the longer show. I don't know how it works. I haven't kept track of the number count, but this time they're hyping American Alpha's debut and AJ Styles with a message for John Cena. At least they didn't tell us AJ Styles on the Miz TV show so we can send a message to John Cena. Thank you for that, WWE. It may end up being on there, but at least I don't have to spend all frickin' Monday night and Tuesday on another damn Miz TV segment. Just let it happen, and I'll get over it sooner. The broadcast team then hyped Brock's appearance for later. So a lot of good, consistent plugging for Brock Lesnar. And then it was time for Finn Balor. And Cole was talking about how many say he had the greatest debut in the history of Raw. And he made his entrance. And then, long story short here, Balor was well-received. But he was interrupted quickly by Seth Rollins, and I like Graves' line saying, winning a home run derby doesn't make you Babe Ruth. And he said Rollins is the man who has carried WWE on his back before. And Rollins ended up, you know, he was just kind of praising Balor, but also pointing out that everything he'd done, he'd already done first, like winning the NXT Championship when Rollins was the first to win it. Balor being the fifth overall pick, I think it was, in the draft, where Seth was number one, beating Roman Reigns, and Seth had already done that the night after, you know, the night that he returned from major knee surgery, as he put it. And so, I mean, this was good. He even compared himself to Bill Murray, to Balor's Melissa McCarthy from the Ghostbusters movies. I like that. And Balor said he is going to beat Rollins to become the first Universal Champion. And then Rollins starts laughing. He goes, I know, I compared you to Melissa McCarthy, but I didn't know you were a real comedian. He said the odds of Balor beating him are the same as the Braves winning the World Series. This led to, and my God, do we have a lot of readers in Atlanta, based on the number of people who reached out offering to send results of superstars and things of that nature, and I appreciate it, but I got to say it, the most annoying chant ever. I still have bad memories from the 1991 World Series. in the games that were played in Atlanta, listening to that damn Braves freaking tomahawk chop, that whole routine that they do, it was like, just shut up and watch the game. Now, hey, don't get me wrong. I'm sure you guys were sitting there going, four games of idiot Minnesotans waving their homer hankies. It's all good. I get it. And yeah, I'll say it after all these years. Herbeck, I might have given a little nudge, just a little bit. Anyway, he picked on the Braves, and they responded with that chant and the chop, and then Rollins shut him up. I don't know why the Twins didn't do this. He just told them their team sucks. They need to face it. And as someone who also has a really bad baseball team this year, I can say this: it looked like the fans did face it. They accepted it. It was like, yeah, he's right. Let's just shut up. Rollins credited Balor with being a great NXT champion and how he's been the man in WWE instead. And then he told Balor to check out the video of his on the awesome video of his on the network, or watch his match with his buddy Sami Zayn for later in the show. And Balor did fire back. He said the big difference between them is that he earned his title shot, whereas Rollins had his shot handed to him. Rollins said he never had anything handed to him. And he said the only thing that's going to be handed to him is a Universal title when he beats him and shows him who the man really is. And then Balor said the only thing Rollins will have handed to him at SummerSlam is his ass. And the fans responded with a yes chant. See, you say ass on a wrestling show the right way, they still like it. You say it like Abyss used to on TNA. He just build up to that moment. I'm gonna kick your ass. Not so much. People just kind of sit there. Okay, Abyss got a few people to cheer in the Impact Zone, but that's a weird place, let's face it. Then we had the fans chanting, yes, Rollins acted like he was gonna leave, but he took a cheap shot at Balor, who blocked it, and then Balor punched Rollins, who ended up escaping to ringside. So good segment. I was curious to see how they would handle Finn Balor in a situation like this. Would they put him out there before Mike? When they said Michael Cole was interviewing him, it was like, okay, yeah, I wasn't stunned when Seth Rollins came out, aside from the fact that if you're going to have the first Balor and Rollins confrontation, I think you hype that. I think you make that part of the main hype for the show. You hype it in advance, not just during the show, but going into the show, ideally a week out, but Lord knows they didn't have the show written a week out. But you don't just have Michael Cole hype his exclusive interview. That's not a hook. The first confrontation between Rollins and Balor, now that's a hook. So, I mean, a minor hook. I shouldn't say it's not a hook at all that Balor's going to be interviewed by Cole, because, hey, people want to see Finn Balor. But it's a bigger deal, knowing that this was coming. But then they couldn't have had Seth interrupt. Like, ah, come on. But no, the fact that they trusted Finn to go back and forth with Rollins a little bit, and Rollins carried it, but Finn would respond. And when he did, he's not the best guy at doing this, but he didn't stand out in a negative way, in my opinion. I felt like he did fine. The crowd was with him. They were into it. He's not John Cena. He's not that guy that just shines in this situation, but he did well. And I don't know how much they'll do with this. I think I said it last week. The best you can do with Finn Balor is put him out there in a situation and let him sell the match as if it's real. Don't ask him to be cute. Don't ask him to tell bad jokes. Just let him be serious and hype the match in the best way he knows how. And that's what they did here. And it worked. And so far, so good. We had some hype for a tag match that would be coming up. They went to a commercial break. When they came back, we got a recap of the previous segment. Then we had Lana wearing, I don't know, Courtney Love's wedding dress or something. I don't know what the hell that was. But she introduced Rusev as a true American hero and now her husband. And she said he's the only man who can have her. And then, yeah, I knew there was something about her that I saw tonight that I just didn't like. It wasn't the dress either. Something was changed. Something changed about her. I'm like, not nearly as appealing. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. After the ring entrances, JoJo delivered the in-ring intros, and then Rusev interrupted her, demanded to be introduced first because he's the champion. Good for you, Rusev. You have that right. She complied. Good for JoJo. And then Henry ended up playing to the crowd and getting a nice reaction. I just like how simple and effective it was that Henry wanted the opportunity, wanted to do it for America, and the Atlanta fans got behind him. I don't know if they believed he was going to win, but they were down with seeing him try. But it was Rusev defeating Mark Henry in 6:40 to retain the U.S. Championship. It was the accolade. Henry fought out of it once. Rusev applied it the second time. He never got it in the first time, but the second time around he did, and Henry had to tap. So Henry should be deported, but we'll give him a break because he's going to Brazil. So I mean, even if he wasn't going to the Summer Olympics on behalf of WWE, I would say, yeah, he should spend some time out of the country. He let his country down by failing to beat the Russian Bulgarian Rusev. After the match, Rusev spoke about Henry being a former Olympian and said the Americans win because the Olympians are rigged. Basically, against Russia and Bulgaria, he said, no Americans deserve gold in Rio. Roman Reigns doesn't like this. How dare you? No one cares about the U.S. Olympic team more than Roman Reigns, apparently. He had some new red and black vest. A little too much red going on Raw. A little too much red with Sheamus. I'm not talking about the guy's hair. I'm talking about the ring gear with the hair. And now the red ropes. And now you got Roman with the black and red kind of. The vest thing, not working for me. Rusev started to leave. Roman got in his way. Not once, but twice. He wouldn't let him leave. And Rusev said, "Huh, I'll see this." And he just, instead of trying to walk around Rain, Roman, he decided to back up and was going to make an exit behind him. It's like, yeah, what are you going to do now, Roman? Well, Rusev blew it. Instead of just leaving the ring that way, where Roman would have had to have run to catch him. He ended up going for some sort of a sneak attack. Roman saw it coming, hit him with a clothesline, set up for a Superman punch. Rusev avoided it by ducking to ringside, but Reigns followed and performed the move off the ring steps. So Roman hits Rusev with the Superman punch, and I mixed feelings on this. I think, I mean, this is a step back for Roman Reigns. He's not in the title picture right now. He's lost some matches. From a storyline standpoint, it makes sense. You can question how much of this has to do with the wellness policy suspension and all of that. Is this a long-term thing for him? A lot of questions here. I think it's fair to ask those things. Don't have any answers on this, and wouldn't surprise me a bit if it's like, well, yeah, he's gonna, it's kind of a rebuilding, but we'll see. I guess just how long this sticks, how long he's in this feud with Rusev. What I don't like about it is the Rusev side of it because they haven't built him up properly. Now, if these two go out there and just tear the house down at SummerSlam, assuming that's where their match is going to be, and okay, and Rusev retains the championship, you might have something here, and that will elevate Rusev. But I just wish they had been. I mean, Rusev he's been beating the heroes of WWE superstars. And he needed some bigger wins. He needed to look more dominant before I'd get him into a program with Roman specifically. But it has potential, but that was my concern. Then they went to hyping Nia Jax, and Michael Cole says, Nia Jax destroys Raw tonight. Then the fifth match, they just came back after commercial break and went right to it. Titus O'Neil doesn't even get a televised entrance. Darren Young and Bob Backlund do. It was Titus O'Neil pinning Darren Young in 350. He held the tights while pinning him. This was weird. They set this match up on the pre-show, so it wasn't like there wasn't any build. But listen, WWE, you have 3 freaking hours plus of Raw. You have a tag team that people kind of liked. I never got into it, but some people, frat boys, love to do the millions of dollar dance or whatever the hell that was. And people were into this, and hey, I was up for at least getting some story about this should have meant more. The pre-show, what they did was okay, and they replayed that on Raw. It was just Titus actually questioning, they're trying to make Darren Young great again. When the hell were you ever great, basically? And that was fine, but I felt like you could have presented this in a way where you talked about their history together and what this means and who has something to gain from, who gains more from this, and none of that. And then Titus just wins while holding the tights. I'm like, okay, so Titus must be the heel. Darren doesn't have the Miz to play with anymore because Miz is and his Intercontinental title are over on SmackDown. So Young is out of the title picture after having one of the weirdest endings to a match in recent memory. But now he's feuding with his former tag partner. Well, to be continued. We'll get back to that in a little bit. Backstage, we had Sheamus complaining about Mark Henry getting a title shot when he's a former champion. Cesaro showed up and bickered. He wanted it. Stephanie called Cesaro and saying he wished he had been drafted to SmackDown Live. I'm like, good, trade him. But she didn't. Foley said Cesaro's stock dropped because of a medical report that listed his shoulder as a big question mark. And he said Shane McMahon had access to the same report. So I guess they're trying to explain, finally, why Cesaro dropped. They may have had one for Sheamus. I don't think he needed one. Foley ended up booking them in a match against one another. And he said the winner we'll get a future championship match. The world championship? U.S. Championship? I wasn't quite sure. They just kind of jawed at each other briefly. Then we got a shot of Nia Jax walking backstage while Saxon hyped her match for after the break. And when they came back from that, we ended up with another WWE Cruiserweight Classic video feature. It's not for the Cruiserweight Classic. They're not hyping that for Wednesday. They're just telling you that the Cruiserweights are coming to Raw. The division is exclusive to Raw. God, it belongs on SmackDown. It doesn't it? I mean, they're just so light on talent over there. It'd be like, oh, hey, let's see what this Cruiserweight thing's all about. They might be a little light on some talent, but at least they have the Cruiserweights. That could be really good. No, we're not getting that. That's on the crowded Raw show, where they can't even find time to properly promote a Darren Young and Titus O'Neil match. Not that I'm into Darren Young and Titus O'Neil's feud. I'm just not. But still, if you're going to do it, do a better job with it. They did show Bob Backlund blowing a gasket on Titus backstage. Titus told him to calm down or I'll knock your old ass out. He should have said this to Bob years ago. He actually showed up. Young showed up and ended up knocking Titus down with a shot from behind. Don't ever put your hands on Mr. Backlund. So Young is kind of, I mean, last time we saw him, he was looking at his hands and kind of in Backlund mode. Like he's kind of snapping. He's picking that up from Bob. So the fact that I mean, I guess he's the baby face here. There was nothing really redeeming. I mean, I guess he saved Bob Backlund from getting attacked, or not even, it wasn't like Titus was going to attack him. He just threatened him and, calm down or I'll knock your old ass out. And that's all it took. So I didn't come away feeling like, good for Darren Young. What a noble baby face. And Titus wasn't heelish enough to make me think he's someone I want to see Darren Young get revenge on. So I came away feeling very blah about the whole thing. Nia Jax ended up squashing Ariel Monroe in 110. She ended up, power slamming her. It kind of started with her behind her back, I think it was, and then got her up for the power slam. And like, whatever it was, I don't remember the exact spot. I just remember going, oh, that's kind of cool. And then she stood on her with one foot and got the win that way. I'm still waiting. I want to hear the old King Kong Bundy make the referee count to five bit. Then Byron stood in the ring and asked Nia about making a statement and how it feels. How does it feel? She took another shot at Monroe and says, why don't you ask her how it feels? They went backstage where creepy Tom Phillips. I'm sorry, that guy's getting creepier by the week. There's just something about him now where he's just a little too confident, a little too suave, and I don't. Tom Phillips, he's creeping me out. I gotta say, he interviewed Sami Zayn and pointed out that Seth Rollins said he's using Zayn to prove a point. Zayn said, he praised Rollins, but he said his biggest weakness is his mouth. And then he said he talked about having the match of his life at Battleground. And he did, and he managed to close a chapter of his life. And I'm like, oh, Kevin Owens is going to show up and beat up Sami Zayn tonight, but he didn't. And he said he has something to prove tonight too. And then we ended up with footage of New Day drawing fruit from a bag. Woods drew a banana. The other two had oranges. I figured it out. He's the odd man out because of the stipulation that one of the New Day members could not take part in the tag match. So they go to commercial and they come back. We did get all three New Day members. It was I don't know why they did this bit where Xavier Woods couldn't be at ringside. It really didn't serve a purpose. I don't know if they were going for with that, but he ended up he went backstage for the match where they did their shtick. They almost put the oranges together like balls and the banana like a well a Schwanz. I don't know what you want to call it, folks, but yeah, they thought better of it. They stopped and said that too much or something like that. I can't remember what it was, but yeah, they wouldn't go quite there, and they yeah, I think it was too much. And some of the crowd was really into this and was looking forward to it. And yeah, it was implied, it was fine. And then Wood said he can't perform in front of his hometown crowd, but he gets to hang out backstage and enjoy his bootios. And one of them, I think it was Kofi, said, "We need money, go buy it." And they did emphasize it's a real cereal now. Seventh match was Kofi Kingston and Big E beating Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows in 125 in a non-title match. Anderson and Gallows were doing the two sweet hand thing together when Kofi, I think it was, or Big E, ended up just rolling up Anderson and pinning him. They made him look like idiots. So you get your stipulation without the third member of New Day at ringside. They somehow got that stipulation, and then you lose in like under 90 seconds because you're too busy doing a hand thing with your partner. That looked really bad. And they tried to make up for it, and some will say, oh, it's fine. And after the match, they got their heat back. They look stupid. I'm sorry. I remember this. I didn't come away feeling like, oh, wow, and it's a new moment for Anderson and Gallows. Forget the end of the match. These guys are on fire now because they beat up the New Day members. Look, the Wyatt family did too. Where'd that get us? And then the New Day, it's you gotta remember who this is. It's New Day. They might come out next week and act like nothing happened. They do that a lot. They've done that to a lot of teams. The only team they've really sold anything for was the Wyatts, kind of. And that's it. I mean, they may come out a little bit angry and act. I hope they do. They should. But I don't know that just one. And it was a good beatdown of the. Because Woods came running out to help. They ended up leaving all three men lying. They grabbed Big E by the legs and pulled him groin first into the ring post. And so he was laid out. They promised us, or I shouldn't say, they didn't promise us an update. They said they hope to have one by the end of the night. If not, go to the WWE website to get one. I think he's going to be okay. Eighth match was Sheamus losing to Cesaro in 6 minutes, so Cesaro gets some title shot. I think it's for the U.S. title. I don't know. But it was kind of a back-and-forth slugfest, and then Cesaro performed a neutralizer, countering another move. I don't remember what Sheamus was going for, and he got the clean pin with that. It's just hard to get into anything Sheamus is doing. I hate to say it because I was a Sheamus apologist at one point. Thought people were pretty tough on the guy when he got the big push out of the gate because he was Triple H's workout buddy. It's like this guy worked really hard overseas, and I liked his early run in WWE. I've liked a lot of things he's done in WWE. These last, what have we gone on, a couple years now? It's been brutal. The League of Nations thing did him no good. That last title reign he had wasn't even enough to breathe some life into this character. Not good for Sheamus. I don't know what you do with him. Trade him to SmackDown. See if they can do something. But it's too bad. They had something here, and I don't blame him. I know he had the injury and he's out for a while. I really do blame them. They just have creatively. They've really. I mean, that's one guy who has probably suffered the most for what they've done. I mean, he just means nothing right now. He comes to the ring and it's like nobody really wants to see him. He's just in a bad place, and I feel bad for him. They got after some hype for Brock. They went to a commercial break. When we came back, we had Sheamus and Cesaro still fighting. They had to be held apart by security in the ring. Heath Slater and Jinder Mahal stood together. Slater yelled to let them fight, referring to Sheamus and Cesaro. Introduced Jinder as one of his best friends. Mick Foley came out and said it was a surprise since neither one of them are on the Raw roster. And he called for a battle of the bands with the two of them going against one another in the match. He said the Raw roster was stacked. Ain't that the truth? And he said he had one position open and the winner of it could fill that. Now, Heath was like, it's not going to, we're friends. We're not going to do that. Jinder was down. Jinder ended up motioning for the referee and then blasted Slater with a kick and pinned him. So the whole match was like 14 seconds. So Jinder gets a spot on Raw. So now that Mick Foley has said there's nothing open, does that mean Slater's just going to be exclusive to SmackDown? Maybe, and we talked about it in Q&A today. .net member or forum user Assassin5 ended up asking whether I thought he would show up on Raw. I hadn't really thought about it, but I'm happy he did because I think it made sense that. It'd be weird if he was just petitioning to get on SmackDown. It's like, well, then he's just a SmackDown wrestler. So the fact that he went back and forth, not that it's a huge angle. I'd like to see them do more with Heath Slater than what, and have him get something out of this other than being just the wacky guy who loses all the time. I think he can be kind of the lovable loser that you root for, where maybe he, I don't know. I just feel like there's more. They haven't quite tapped into, I think Slater's a popular undercard guy, and they haven't quite tapped into, something with him that will really kind of just give him a little bit of a fun run. I think there's one waiting. We ended up with Tom Phillips asking Chris Jericho if he's worried about being a marked man after taking out Enzo. And this was Jericho kind of went into the bit again because he said he had someone to watch his back. And then Phillips asked him who. And then he's like, Jimmy. And then when Phillips would press, Jimmy Marvin. So he's making up a name, and he just had done this recently. I don't know if I want him to go back. That's the kind of thing that, yeah, it's funny, but it kind of takes me out of the moment too. It's like, all right, I'm watching a guy do a skit. Kevin Owens showed up and said that it's not a real person, but it's okay because he has his back. And then Jericho called Phillips Tim and corrected him. when he tried to correct him, Jericho called him a stupid idiot. Graves confirmed that Phillips is a stupid idiot and hyped Rollins against Zayn for after the break. That match was Seth Rollins beating Sami Zayn in 11:45. Good match. As I wrote, I wish the circumstances had been different. This was like never in doubt. And it was Seth challenging or, fighting for the new Universal Championship. It's like they're not going to have Sami beat Seth. I mean, could they have made this a triple threat? I guess, but I wasn't looking for that. I think they, it's Balor and against Rollins, and that's a fun match. But and so this was good. I never bought into Sami having a chance to win. That was kind of the issue I had with it. But I was still entertained by it. It held my interest. I just know that if circumstances were different, this match would have meant a lot more, and people would have been very excited by it. They showed Paul Heyman exiting Brock Lesnar's locker room, and he was laughing, and he said, "I'll see you out there." And they went to a commercial, and they came back. Byron Saxton hyped Sean Puff Daddy Combs for Raw in Anaheim next week. News to me that he's Puff Daddy again. Was it last time I checked in? I think he was P. Diddy, and then I think he was just Diddy. I guess he's back to being Puff Daddy. Is it because weed is legal in so many states that now it's okay? Or is it just he's not that big of a hit with the mainstream anymore, and so screw it? I'm going back to being, I don't know. Not my style of music, so if I'm way off on all of this, I'm way off on all of this. JoJo introduced Paul Heyman. He stood in the ring and introduced himself and just did the big build-up, talking about how for the past 3 hours the fans have been sitting on the edges of their seats, waiting and salivating for the moment that the single biggest box office attraction in combat sports history makes his way to the ring for the WWE Universe to worship. And he introduced Brock Lesnar as the Beast of the Broctagon, the ruler and conqueror of WWE, and the Viper Slayer. And Lesnar ended up making his entrance and received, get that, a favorable reaction, but kind of subdued. And again, is it the time of, the show that this occurred at? Or, and we'll see. I think as we hear, we see Brock again in the future, but I at least, they started, the first chant you heard was a Suplex City chant. And Brock smirked at this, and I wonder if it was a smirk of relief, like, okay, that could have gone worse. Heyman did hype that, SummerSlam, saying that his client will entertain you. And then he said, "Did you just hear yourself right?" Yes, because Brock Lesnar's form of entertainment is not the style of entertainment that they like to market and sell and promote here in WWE. He said Brock Lesnar's form of entertainment is politically incorrect. I don't remember what word he used, but he said he's not supposed to use that word, but he's standing next to Lesnar so he can say anything he wants. And then he kind of contradicted that a little bit later. He said that Lesnar doesn't need to step up to the new era. The new era needs to step up to him. He's not there to court favor with Mick Foley or Stephanie McMahon. He mentioned Orton, who got some soft cheers and some boos even. And then Heyman said that Lesnar has heard of, maybe he said, "You've heard of Randy Orton, a third generation superstar and a 12-time champion." And he mentioned the RKO. And he said, "They say Randy Orton is one RKO away from victory at any moment." And Heyman said that they say Orton is an RKO away from shocking the world, just as Lesnar did when he ended Undertaker's streak. There were a few boos, and Heyman just told those fans to get over it already. And he brought up Randy Orton's theme song and asked how many of those voices are telling him that Lesnar is going to beat his ass at SummerSlam and drag him down to Suplex City. And he said if the voices are not telling him that, those voices are full of malarkey. He said he was using the word that the vice president used at the Democratic Convention because he wants to keep his job for at least 1 week. Like, Paul, you just told us you can say whatever the hell you want because you're standing next to Brock Lesnar. Minor slip. Still a fun promo. Heyman continued to boast about Lesnar being dominant over over Orton. Speaking of minor slip, typo on my part. So, touche. He said the only chance that Orton has is the RKO, but he's not going to hit it at SummerSlam. "You're not man enough to hit an RKO on Brock Lesnar," he said. And then we found out that, yes, indeed, Randy Orton is man enough to hit an RKO on Lesnar because he appeared in the ring and hit the RKO out of nowhere on Brock Lesnar. And then several referees ran out. Orton fled through the crowd. Stephanie McMahon and Mick Foley rush onto the stage, as much as Mick can rush these days. Well, he's moving better, that's for sure. But they came out with security, and then Orton exited through the crowd in the basically the same spot that The Shield used to make their entrance in. And then he stopped and looked down at Lesnar and was back on his feet at this point. And then Orton struck his pose and smiled, and then Lesnar looked up at Orton. And Cole questioned whether Orton had fired the first shot or signed his death warrant. So we can say death warrant, but I don't think we can say magic killer anymore because yeah, WWE changed that name. The Anderson and Gallows finishing move. I don't know that it's because of the killer part. I certainly suspect that it is. What is the new crazy zany name they've come up for? They've come up with for the finisher. It is the Boot of Doom. Oh boy. Not that I was like, I didn't even like care about the Magic Killer name. Like, it must be some, I don't know what they're going for. But yeah, you can anyway, you can say you can say Death Warrant, but not killer. I can't keep track of WWE's list of politically correct terms. What works, what doesn't. But now this, I like the final angles I said earlier. I thought it was Paul Heyman doing good mic work, not his greatest moments or anything like that, and didn't have a great, really, I shouldn't say great crowd because they were great at times during the show, but he had a tired crowd to play off of, and I think he worked them up as much as he could. There were some fun lines in there, and Brock got to kind of stand there and be Brock. And then he took an RKO, and had it just been Heyman gloating and Lesnar standing there doing his thing and going off the air with the promo, it would have been a really, not a flat end to the show. Because who knows what Heyman would have done then promo-wise, how would it would have concluded. But this was a really good ending to the show. So, again, I know some of you are going to hate the fact that they already had someone cross the brand line. I think it makes sense. I really do. And especially since, given the way the Raw management handled that, their reaction to it. They weren't happy with it. He's not their guy. He's not supposed to be here. And so as long as we don't start seeing this happen on a regular basis with people other than the two guys having an inter-brand match at SummerSlam, and if all of a sudden we see Enzo and Cass show up on SmackDown for no reason, well, that's different, but right now I think it makes sense. But that is going to do it for now, everybody. If you enjoy the full-length audio reviews of WWE Raw, know that they are available on the member side each and every week. So if you're listening on the all-access side and you enjoy this type of full-length audio review, be sure to check out .net membership. Visit the main page at ProWrestling.net. Once you're there, look in the sign-up area. Three different pricing options. $7.50 will get you in the door. If you want to whittle that price down, you can do so. You can take advantage of the six-month option or bring that price all the way down to $5.50 per month by taking the annual option. It is the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net, and you have access to all of our audio content. All of the audio content we've ever done is available exclusively to .NET members. Thank you so much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with an audio review of the Ring of Honor television show. And I'll just say this. I've already seen the show. It's a good one. I'm looking forward to talking about that. Well, some highs and lows, but certainly the big angle that they did was a good one. So check back tomorrow for that. Until then, thanks for listening. Take care.